Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Real As Yates podcast. We are your hosts, Taylor Yates
and Paige Yates.
In this podcast, we share with you everything we know about real estate, Greater Boston, and life. And in case you're wondering, yes, we are in fact related. We are a top producing mother-son real estate agent team where we lead, surprise, the Yates team.
Hi, T.
Hi, Mom. How you doing?
Good. So, anything new in your world of child chaos or?
I would say nothing necessarily new, but my daughter is definitely going through a phase of like, you know, exceptional interest in singing and dancing. So she's three, so she's a toddler, and you know, she's like gyrating her hips. She bobs her head. She swings her shoulders. And she lip syncs to a lot of stuff.
And she closes her eyes too.
Yeah, I think that's her trying to work really hard by closing her eyes. It's very funny. But you know what's funny? So this morning we were rocking out to Big Girls Don't Cry, right, by Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. And it was interesting. We've struggled with this one because we have a Google Home. And so we say, you know, hey, Google, play Big Girls Don't Cry. And Google defaults to some song called Big Girls Don't Cry by Fergie, which I don't want to diminish her achievements. I certainly rocked out to Black Eyed Peas in high school and college. But I was like, why would you ever think that I would want the Fergie version over Frankie Valli, right?
Yeah.
And so, but she, and the thing with kids too, is if you don't get the exact right one, it's kind of a crisis. Like you are two steps from a meltdown at that point.
That's the negative and the beauty of technology, right? It's the convenience of being able to say that. But then the reality is there's some choices that you have to be more specific about.
Right. You know, it's funny. Everyone's been talking this year about, you know, technology is going to eat the world and ChatGPT and AI. And I think, you know, I'm like, well, I don't know. If my Google Home or your Alexa is like any indication, we're probably safe for a long time. You know? We're talking about a different topic this week. We're talking about the National Association of Realtors settlement and what it means for home buyers and home sellers. Now, there's a big asterisk on this one. Neither of us are attorneys. And there's probably also some law that remains to be settled here. And we are figuring this out because it just launched. The rules just took effect in August. So we're going to do our best to fill you in on what we think we know. But, you know, if any of it sounds questionable, feel free to like, you know, ask an attorney or, you know, look at the paperwork yourself. But we want to see if we can give a high level. So why don't we start with like what exactly happened? There was a lawsuit against the National Association of Realtors that basically said, I mean, I think it was something along the lines of people were requiring sellers to pay co-broke fees to buyer's agents.
So I think we should go back one step.
Yeah.
In the state of Massachusetts, you have listing agents mm-hmm. and you have selling agents.
Can we call them buyer's agents? Because I feel like selling agents is like an insider term.
Correct.
And it's really confusing.
Buyer's agents. And therefore, these two agents mm-hmm. were both being paid inside the transaction by the seller.
That's right.
That's what started it.
Right. So, you know, what basically, if you've ever signed a listing agreement, you'll probably have seen something that said you're going to pay, you know, like around here, 4-5%, depending on what town you're in. And of that, here's the amount that's going to get paid to the buyer's agent. So some people made the argument like, oh, I shouldn't have to pay a co-broke fee. And some of the MLSs were requiring it. You had to post a co-broke fee. And, you know, they won. They won their case. Now, I think they won their case. And so there have been a number of things that have gone into effect to basically increase transparency about how fees work and how much everybody's paying whom. And I sort of think about it the way I imagine people thought about Zillow when it first came out. I remember Zillow came out and people were like, oh, this is the end of real estate agents. And it wasn't, right? Like it just was like another actor in the ecosystem. I think this is probably going to shake out the same way. Like it'll be different. Things will be different from here on out, but not like I don't think it's going to be a dramatic change. And the reason I don't think it'll be a dramatic change is yes, you used to have to post a co-broke fee, but it could be as low as 1 cent. And I just don't think the difference between 0 and 1 cent is that different. So that leads me to think that the market was setting co-broke fees?
I think it is so new to us that we're not really seeing the total fallout yet of what this may mean.
Yeah.
I also believe different markets will have different reactions to this settlement.
Right.
Obviously, we're in a more expensive market being in New England than someone that might be in rural Iowa or rural Ohio. I think the positive about this is the essence of it is transparency.
Right.
And that is always a good thing.
Right. And Caldwell has rolled out a bunch of new forms. Like that we have a new listing agreement, we have new buyer's agreements, and I actually like them. I think they're very straightforward and easy to explain and easy to understand.
And I think for both sellers and buyers, they now see similar information about the fees.
Right.
There are options out there. And I think people have to work through what they want to do, where they are creating value, and how they're going to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some of it will remain similar to what we've been doing in the last years.
Right.
And I think for other people, there'll be changes that will maybe change some of the burden of fees.
Right. And you know, what I think is going to be the most immediate impact is I think some of the players that probably shouldn't have been in real estate are going to get out of real estate. So, you know, I read this story about like a hairdresser who did real estate on the weekends. And I'm like, I don't know if you should be doing this anyway. Right. Like, I don't think this is a weekend gig. This is a 24/7 gig. And if this is just your side hustle, like, I can't imagine you're bringing that much value to the table. And when there's this much money on the line, you kind of like, I don't know, I feel like people are entitled to full-time professional help.
And they want it. I mean, it's one of the largest assets people buy.
Right.
Or sell.
Right.
And they need to have someone who can get them the information that their buyer or seller should know that's happening.
And let's take, for example, like when I take out a buyer for the first time, right? And I say, we're going to see some houses together. What I do in that first go round is I say, you know, we go in these houses and I say, this is just how I think about this house, right? Here's the things that I look for when I'm like in the living room, when I'm in the basement, when I'm in the primary bedroom. These are the boxes that I'm ticking off in my head. And these are sort of the gray zones that I'm exploring. Like, you know, how's the floor plan work? What's the condition of, you know, do I see any like stains into the sink? And then what that does is people also give me feedback and they say, well, how do they think about the house, right? So I might say, hey, this kitchen's kind of small. They might say, I don't cook, so I don't care. But I do care that it's got this beautiful sunroom because
I read.
Yeah,
or exactly. I have a piano.
Or I have a piano, right? That's what I think a good agent does. They bring this baseline knowledge to you. And then they take into account all of the special things about you and what you need to make your life work. And then they synthesize it into a game plan for how you're going to get the home that you actually want. And if you can't do that, and I just don't think you can do that part-time.
And I do think, too, that there is tremendous value for buyers and for sellers to have brokers that know other brokers, have worked with other brokers. And when the deal doesn't seem attainable, try to figure out a way to move both parties to a middle ground.
Right.
And that is value in who you're working with.
Right, exactly. So, is this going to change things? Probably, and we don't know yet exactly how. But I think fundamentally, it's going to be more or less the same.
With additional disclosures.
With more paperwork.
Earlier on.
Right. You know, actually, probably the biggest immediate difference is offers are going to come with a co-broke fee listed in them. And that can be negotiable. And they'll decide who's paying for what. And, you know, what I would say is, which is fine, right? And I don't think that's the end of the world. What I have been telling people is as long as the fee gets paid by the money that's brought to closing, it's probably in your interest to pay a co-broke fee because that's leveraged money, right? Versus making them pay out of pocket. That might be coming out of their down payment and therefore reduce their buying power by a lot.
Right. I think that's the thing that we just don't want to have happen. Reduce buyers' buying power. Because people that could buy $1 million house, if they have to come up with a lot of extra cash, then they're finding that they might only be able to buy a home at $900,000.
Which for, you know, a lot of people, especially in expensive markets like ours, you know, they're stretching to get there. And so we want, you know, we don't want to make home ownership unattainable.
Yeah. We're all working to learn how this is going to affect us. And we're doing the best we can so far.
Mm-hmm.
Time is going to be the true factor of helping us all better understand the workings of this new law.
Right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with a question from the audience.
Did you know that Taylor and I aren't just your favorite real estate podcast hosts? We're also pretty darn good at our day jobs. With over 30 years experience and $1 billion sold in Greater Boston, we're real estate agents you can trust. If you're buying or selling a home, reach out to us at contact@yatesboston.com today.
So, Mom, if you were not a real estate agent right now, what would you do for a living?
I would want to be an athletic coach.
An athletic coach?
Of a team.
What kind of sport?
Oh, I would probably do something like field hockey or
lacrosse
if I had.
For those of you who don't know, this is what my sister-in-law does. So I don't know if there's some, did you recently talk to her and she was telling you how awesome was?
I always had wanted to be a coach because I was a big college athlete. So I played three sports in college. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, unless you're a coach for the NCAA, you know, Ohio State or some university that pays well, as you can well imagine, we don't pay coaches necessarily a lot of money. And when you have three children, I had to find a profession where I was actually paid for my knowledge.
Yeah you got to make a living.
But I always wanted to do that. I always wanted to be a coach.
Yeah, that's cool. I would probably, you know what, actually, let's see, what would I do if I was not doing this? I mean, because I'm into this for a similar reason as you. Like, I like helping people. But, you know, it's kind of the right mix of the kind of time management that I can use to make my household go around and the amount of money that I can make doing it. I think most people in real estate, if they're being honest, that's what they'll tell you. And, gosh, I don't know.
A teacher? A professor?
Yeah, I don't think a professor. You know what? Actually, it would be really fun. I love really good TV shows. I think I would really love to write a good TV show.
Oh.
That would be fun.
In your spare time.
Well, no, I'm saying if I had a different job, right? If I could pick any job in the world, I'd be writing good TV shows.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I know, right? But that's tough living. And
could be like Ellen Hillenbrand that writes 20 books.
A year, right?
A year, one a year for 20 years. And she's now just made one into a movie. So you may get there.
Oh, man. How far down the rabbit hole do you want to go with my opinions on writing and TV?
I don't.
I'll start with this, okay? I think there's a reason why a lot of really good TV shows are based on books. I think I can just tell when writing has gone through a lot of drafts and when it has not, right? And I think when in Hollywood, there's sometimes it seems like there's sometimes too much excitement to get to production because it's fun to be like on set and filming and like acting and doing all this stuff. But writing might just take a long time and they don't want to do that. But if you can basically start with a pre-written story where all the parts already fit together and you just have to adapt it to the screen, you know, you can basically do what Hollywood likes to do, which is go straight to production.
Well, I'm sure it's money is time in Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
So having something that they can start with, you know, puts them a year in advance.
Totally. I'm watching a show right now with my wife that I don't really love, but we're kind of hate watching it together. And I just remember watching a scene where it's like, you had the right idea. Like it was the end of the episode and they landed on the right idea, but all the part, it was two characters having a conversation that took place over the course of the entire episode. Where they landed was really interesting, but none of the component conversations led up to that. So I was like, ah, like this was a first, they just ran with the first draft. They land on this interesting thing and like, we don't have time to go back and rewrite everything. You know, we just got to start filming.
You're going to have a second career.
Yeah.
Once you get everybody launched, you're going to sit down and write.
Yeah, I'll write. Yeah, I'll write the novel. What's it called? You know the song Piano Man?
Yeah.
I'll be that guy. What is it? John's a real estate novelist.
Yeah.
You know, that never finished his book. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the awesome question. If you're a curious cat and you would like your question to be considered, you can just send us an email at contact@yatesboston.com or slide into our DMs at Yates Team Boston. That's it for this week. Be sure to tune in next week wherever you find your podcasts. If you enjoyed this, be sure to like, subscribe, and give us that 5-star review. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Yates Team Boston or on the web at yatesboston.com.